Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 285, my interview with filmmaker and cartoonist Jer Moran. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts. You can listen to Yes But Why through the Audible app. That's right. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your account today. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. We want to be there for you, so whatever issues that you're having with your podcasting, or if you're like, we just don't even know where to go to solve this problem, let us know. We'll connect you to our friends and experts around us so that you can have the best podcast you can ever make. Mention code YBY20 and you'll get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. We can help. PodcastCadet.com. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by True Hemp Science. True Hemp Science is my resource for vegan-friendly whole plant extract CBD oil. Check out TrueHempScience.com for all the CBD products available to you now. Use code YesButY7 to get 7% off your order of $50 or more. Plus, you'll get a free packet of CBD edibles with your order. TrueHempScience.com. This week on Yes But Why, I chatted with Jer Moran, comedian, cartoonist, filmmaker, and musical improviser. We talk about Jer's love for animation. We share stories of wild performance art pieces we've seen. And we connect on the difficulty we have found finding artistic collaborators. We had a great time, and I really hope you enjoy this episode. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 285, Jer Moran on creating the art that makes you happy. Enjoy! I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah!
So I drew a lot. I just drew so much. I was pretty much in love with cartoons, just anything animated, Looney Tunes, Nicktoons, what else? The Cartoon Network stuff. Mm. I just shove it all into my eyeballs. Just do it, please. And what I would do is I would take Magna Doodles. I would take a Magna Doodle and I would just draw on it and then erase the picture and then draw the next scene. So I was drawing a movie for myself through the Magna Doodle.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're in your head, already preparing shots. You're okay, first shot, and you draw it. You're okay, next shot. I also appreciate the idea of the edit of the Magna Doodle. You know what I mean? Yep. It's so improv edit where it's all this was a wonderful scene. I really enjoyed drawing it and it's over.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, it is Magna Doodles kind of trained me for improv, for sure.
Yeah, and also filmmaking, because you have this visual eye already. You're not only drawing and super into cartoons, which, I mean, you name all of the major players right there. That was my upbringing as well. Thank goodness when we were kids, the way that the cartoons were so advanced, there was just so many from everywhere. And yeah. And they were just coming at you. So the beauty of it is, it's not you had to watch one or two. There were a lot of options, right? I enjoyed that quite a bit. Because, sometimes I'd like something, my sister would like something different, but that's okay. It's cool. Yeah. There's so much out there. We can all love different stuff. That's the best part. What was your fave? Right.
My favorite cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was so many. I was like, I guess Rocko's Modern Life is definitely like, but I hesitate to even call that my favorite because sure. I just kind of watched everything. I was really into Hanna-Barbera and Jay Ward stuff later because I feel like that's more like for adults, you know, not to knock Hanna-Barbera or anything. I mean, they're dead, so I mean, I guess it's
they'll okay, be all right with it. But they've received some criticism in their life. It's all right.
Yeah, they'll live or not.
At the end of the day, the cartoon still exists. So really, we can't do anything about that. So
it's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rocko's Modern Life and then Ah, Real Monsters were these like two cartoons that I feel like were so strange and so unique to me, like when I saw them when I was like, I don't know, like 7 or 8, I was just like, I've never seen anything like this. Give me more of this. And you know, I feel like I just kind of like, I don't know, like I feel like my thoughts are all in cartoons, as in, so like what I mean by that is like if I'm reading a book, like I'm picturing all the characters as cartoons. Mm-hmm. If I'm reading like a news article and it's like people I don't know, like don't know what they look like, I just picture like cartoon people in like this article.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. What a wonderful way for your brain. That sounds like an awesome coping mechanism for like real life. You're reading like terrible things. You're like, what are they saying now? Oh, well, it's fine.
It's a talking cat.
Yeah, it's totally all right. I just read this terrible article about anger, but he was a cat smoking a cigarette. It seemed fine.
Yes.
Man, no, that's nice. I like it. Now, do you think, was that always the case? Like when you were little, were you thinking in cartoons the whole time? Or did this develop over time? Yeah. Yeah. Since the beginning.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. I would like I went through a phase where I would refuse to watch anything that was live action. I would only watch stuff that was animated. You know, like not even like the Muppets were like, I was like too real for me. I need animated stuff. And I also like, this is weird, but this is triggering a memory that like when I was a young kid, I didn't know how animation was made. Which, you know, like you just see it and it's there. You like, I wasn't thinking of people like actually drawing each character, each scene. So what I thought happened, well, I also knew that it was fake.
Sure.
But what I thought happened was I thought there were people journeying through the forest and like they would come across a tree. And in the tree, if you chop it down, there's like a video screen would come out and play the cartoon. I just remembered that. I don't know why I thought that.
I think that's definitely, I feel like MTV put that in your brain. Like there's definitely, probably. You know, like I'm imagining like commercials where everything turns into a TV. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The 80s and 90s was a big TV time. Like, there's a big TV time. There's a lot that goes on. There's a lot that was, like, developed and created. And, you know, a lot of channels, you know, like we're talking about Nickelodeon. You know, that was huge in the 90s when it first came out. You know what I mean? Though there was a lot of live action on it as well. But at the same time, it was like there was just a lot of creation in that realm. Right. I love that. I love the TV screen and the tree. And what's funny is like, as you were like, if you were to cut the tree, like I knew you were going to say TV screen for some reason. I was like, yes, yes, I am with you. Yeah. That makes total sense to my brain.
Right.
Man, I love that. At what point then did you realize that was not the case? Because you're like already drawing. So like you do understand the mechanism of drawing and creating art. You're doing that already. At what point in your life were you, was it illuminated that, you know, these are a bunch of people drawing? Did you see like a documentary on Disney or something?
Yeah, it's hard to say, I guess. I guess when I visited like Disney World and at the time they had the like section where you saw like videos of people drawing. I'm also thinking of this. Did you ever ride the, what's it called? The Funtastic World of Hanna-Barbera?
No, I don't think that I had, but please tell me about it.
It was a ride film, and it was at Universal Studios Florida. And there was the basic premise is that Elroy has been kidnapped by Dick Dastardly and Muttley. And you have to, I think you're with Yogi Bear, mm-hmm. with the, and you're in the, car or whatever. You're in, a car watching the movie as the car, spins around in real life. But I bring this up because there was a moment where you see either Hanna or Barbera, I forget which one, but you see them take a pencil and draw onto the paper, and they draw Elroy, and Elroy just suddenly comes to life. So, I mean, I think that's what I thought. Was like you drew stuff and it just came to life.
Wow.
Like I wasn't thinking about voices or anything. Like, yeah. I don't know. That's an interesting question that I haven't really thought of.
Well, you know what though? I mean, also like it's hard to really, unless there was a, specific moment where you like met somebody, but though the ride sounds formative for sure, but like right. We can't personally truly understand our own like mental leaps. You know what I mean? Like, because as kids, like there's a lot of stuff we don't understand because it's complicated. Right.
Yeah.
So like the idea, I mean like, even just now, like discussing the idea of animation is like, I probably know very little about what actually goes into creating an animated feature. Like, it's so immense, you know?
Right.
And also like my husband and I, are big fans of watching all of the credits, right? We like to look at them all. And I don't know what all the jobs are, and I don't know all the people, but I like to think about them, and I like to, like, appreciate them. Like, look at how many people it took to make this thing. Like, there's, 47 names right there. What is that? That just says editing. Like, that just no detail, right? Like, there's so many people, right? And then, I've talked to people who make television cartoons, and when they tell me their process, I'm like, wait, what? That is crazy. I mean, I interviewed somebody who wasn't even part of the drawing part, was just part of the writing the story and arranging what the script was for the voice actors.
Nice.
There's so much. There's so much. It's crazy. Like all this, all the intense, detailed work that goes into it. So the likelihood that you as an 8-year-old couldn't grasp it, not crazy. I'm 43 and I'm kind of like, wait, what? Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like I was also at some point I was wondering, like, what was the moment that I realized what an actor was and like the people that I'm seeing in these movies aren't real people, that they're just being played by actors. I think it may have been the Flintstones movie.
You like recognize the actors from other things?
Yeah, like I think I saw like John Goodman in the Flintstones movie and then saw him in something else.
Probably like, Roseanne.
Yeah, probably Roseanne. I was like, hang on, what's going on here? That what? Why is Fred Flintstone in our time? I thought he lived in the caveman era.
So you're trying to tell me that what I watched wasn't just historical documents?
Exactly.
I am appalled. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that. That's so great. I mean, but how would you know unless you had, like, artists in your family? Like, when you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, the only reason why I knew is that my uncle, my dad's brother, was an actor as a job.
Right.
Like, has been his whole life, has been my whole life, right? So when I was growing up, it was like, oh, look, there's Joey on the TV. And then my uncle was on the TV. So I was like, oh, yeah, that's a thing that people do,
yeah.
You know, but only because I had this like personal reference. If your family is not, you know, involved with that kind of stuff, how would you even know who you're talking about?
Right.
It, right? I mean, clearly you're an artist, but maybe your parents are not. And, you know, non-artists don't know a lot of things about how art is made. Right. So they're not like handing out information about it. Like, by the way, this is Brad Pitt. Nice guy. Likes being in movies. People like him in there. But he's a regular dude. He's just a person, right? It's crazy. They pay him money to do this. What? You know, yeah. So, I mean, if it's not around, so then what kind of, other than your own drawing, which is awesome, and I love that you were doing it, like, right away as a child, but, like, what other ways were you, what were your creative influences as you were growing up? Like I said, I had my uncle who was an actor, but, like, what kind of things or, you know, like, camps or events or people that you met that influenced you to continue to do this kind of creative stuff?
I always did like weird voices like all the time, just to amuse myself and entertain myself, which honestly, like I still do, like
same.
Whenever I make something, like I am pretty much only trying to entertain myself. Like my last movie that I made has like several views on YouTube, and I'm pretty sure most of them are from me. because but yeah, as far as like influences, growing up, I became very interested in like do-it-yourself type stuff when it comes to like filmmaking. Like, I went to this college in Santa Fe, New Mexico, that was called the College of Santa Fe. Then it became the Santa Fe University of Art and Design, and then it shut down. But that college was very formative because that is where, like, I took classes in, like, underground film and experimental film and, like, the history of world cinema, and my mind just shattered open because I was just like, hang on, you don't actually have to be, like, a part of Hollywood to make a movie. You don't need, like, a lot of money to make a movie. You can just do it. You can be, like Kenneth Anger or something and just, like, get a bunch of biker buddies and just film them and just put like doo-wop music over it. I'm like, yes, I want that. I want to do that. I want to do that. Because like you mentioned the credits. For me, honestly, whenever I see credits to a movie that has like many, 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 many names, I always get intimidated and scared. Like, I can't get all these people to, like, work on a movie that ultimately I'm just doing to entertain myself. Like, how can I, like, gather this many people? So I'm always, like, interested in, like, the DIY, like, kind of, like, lo-fi type stuff. Bill Clinton is a, you know Bill Clinton?
No, tell me about him.
Yeah, so he's like a indie animator. He's been active, I think, since like the early 80s. He had stuff on MTV, like during Liquid Television. You may recognize his style, like if you look it up. But he, actually like animated a whole feature film by himself. Like I think he had people like doing like coloring or compositing for him, but he like drew an entire feature film by himself. On paper, I'm pretty sure he still doesn't like do digital stuff. But yeah, like when I heard that, I was like, I want to do that. What's going on? Come on. Like,
yeah,
like I just, I don't know. Like, I feel like this is making me sound very selfish, but I'm just like,
why? Because you're making art and you like artists. I don't see how that's the case. Well,
I guess it's just more anxiety, I guess, about like I must do all of this myself because I'm worried that like I can't get other people interested enough into helping me out with this idea.
I hear you. No, that's a really hard part of creating art for sure. It is not something that you really can do all on your own. Cause you're right. Like this guy, Bill Plimpton, may have drawn all of the cells to put together for this feature film, but he probably got some help. Like along the way, at some point, somebody, especially if he's drawing it on paper, somebody's scanning it in. Yep. and then another person's putting them frame by frame by frame into the thing. You know what I mean? Like exactly. The technology existed, you know, he just had to get the help to do it. And you're right. The hardest part sometimes is just getting people to work with you. I completely appreciate that. And I feel like that too, you know, I feel like sometimes I'll have ideas and I'll try to make something happen and I just cannot get anyone behind me to do this kind of thing. And I don't know, like I let ideas, sometimes I'll be like, if I can't get anybody to help me right away, I'll like put that idea on a shelf and be like, okay, well, when I have a crowd, because it ebbs and flows, you know what I mean? Like sometimes there's no crowd, but sometimes there's people, you know, like right now, I don't know who I'd call, you know, if I had to make a project, if somebody was like, all right, let's do this, you know, you're going to have this time slot, you're going to make a sketch show, go. Like, I don't know who I'd call, you know, to get into it. I have some ideas, but I wouldn't really know because I haven't been quite as closely connected. We mentioned before recording that we have children. So there's a bit of a disconnect, right? To the, you know, the artist world, because the artist world is generally like at night, late night partying. Right. And it's like, I don't go to parties. So I don't know who the people are that are doing stuff. Right. But, you know, then there are times when all of a sudden there's just like so many people around and you're like, oh, I got like 75 people. I could ask anybody to do anything. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's ebbs and flows for that kind of thing. And do I feel totally what you're talking about? This sort of like idea of feeling like, I don't know if anyone wants to help me with my project. Yeah, I think that all the time. I think that all the time. And I'm like, am I just gonna create stuff and that's it and maybe it goes nowhere? Yeah. And you know, I think that's okay. You know, I mean, at least your stuff, you're number one, you're drawing. There's a physical something. Then you're doing videos, you're making films, also a physical something. Like there are records of stuff. Most of my artistic career is live theater and it is poof gone.
Yeah.
Right. And it's lucky occasionally if somebody knows what I'm talking about. People who lived in the town while I did it. I'm like, yeah, I did this sketch show for 8 years. And they're like, really? Right? Yeah, I did. Right. Please support me. But, you know, so I like get that idea. It's like no artist is an island, but sure does feel like it.
I know. That's why the other, like, main formative experience for me, shortly after college, it's a husband and wife team of filmmakers, John Moritsugu and Amy Davis. Do you know them?
No, so I don't know like, them.
They're like, I hesitate to use this phrase, but they are punk rock underground filmmakers. And when I say like punk rock, it's not like the Starbucks like job application way, like we're looking for a punk rock barista.
Oh,
they are like. I don't know.
You're probably totally right. Everywhere in Austin, that's how they are like looking for people. We're looking for like a punk rock like guy who works at a CVS. You're like, what? This lovely couple who's making wonderful films.
Like, no, but they are actually like punk rock, like actually like basically I just love underground filmmaking, just like outside the norm. But they made this movie called Pig Death Machine, which it's about these people that become infected with haunted meat or like infected meat. And there's a moment in there that has it's very, very disgusting, but it's a stop motion moment completely created out of meat, like little characters made of raw meat, stop motion animated, while deer hoofs milking blares on the soundtrack. Definitely seek this movie out, and you can see me in it for like half a second. Meat section, but I was just like kind of a student intern on that movie, but it was like it like completely changed the way I see like how people make movies, because there was no hierarchy for the most part. Like everybody was in it together to make this weird movie. There was, I'm trying to think of like how to put this the right way. People, like, it just felt like a family, you know, like it wasn't like they were the directors, but you reported to them, but it never felt like they were like above you or anything. Like it just felt like a family with a singular vision. And that's what I wanted. That's the way, like, I experienced that, and I'm like, this is how I want to do it. This is how I want to make art.
Yeah.
I don't want people to be afraid of me. Like, I want to create families, which I guess goes against everything I just said about doing everything yourself, but
no, I mean, DIY as an idea is lots of people, you know what I mean? It's a different style. It's like we were talking about the credits and all the kabillion of people who are making those movies. Like if you think about their process, there's like this 100 people that prep everything, and then the next 100 people that make it happen with the actors, and then the next 100 people that take the footage that they got from the actor time and cut it up into manageable spots. Then the next people who are like, let's make a story out of this. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then there's the people who got to market it. Then so there's so many different groups, and they're not, like you said, unified as a family. They're not of one mind, right? Each group has a different job. They have a different point of view. They probably have a different boss who tells them a different thing to do. You know what I mean? The movie could have started out as like a sweet and kind romantic comedy, and they're like, so we want a lot of blood in this edit? We're looking for like as much murder as possible. Before or after the wedding? During all of it. As much blood as you could do. If there's not blood in the scene, I want like a red overlay on the film, right? You know what I mean? So you never know. I mean, how many, I don't know about you, but I've done a number of projects where when I finally see the project, I'm like, wait, what? What did I do? What's that? I'm in that? Oh, that's me. Oh, goodness. Like, so you don't know, right? The actor part is like such a small part and they can do whatever they want. They like take pictures of you and then that's it. Right. You sign a thing that says like, thanks. Good luck with the pictures of me. And like, that's about it. I mean, I suppose sometimes there's no signing of papers. You should probably sign some papers, but you know, and you know, that's kind of what happens. And I think, you know, you're comparing this idea of, as an artist, feeling lonely and like you don't have the artistic connection of a community, that is both an individual and a universal feeling, right? Like it is something that we all feel like. We all are like, I just wish I could connect with people and find a community of people who want to play the way I want to play. And some people don't find that. So they like invent it in their small town, you know, Nebraska or whatever. Or they find another way of getting that going. But I think like you're talking about making a film with a small group of people. I think if you have a small enough crew and you kind of like communicate with everybody, of course it's going to be like a family. I mean, like every small film I've ever worked on has felt like that, where it's like everybody's maybe not super egalitarian, like you're talking about this couple, but like at the same time, like it's smaller. So it's like you kind of know who everyone is. You know, sometimes when I don't know what the job is, I do feel confident just walking up to Rando number three and being like, what do you do? Ooh, cool. I didn't even know that was a job, right? But like, that doesn't take away from, DIY is not just an individualist thing, right? Like people, as long as you're like creating stuff on your own and you're not like, you know, when you write a script and you sell it to somebody else and then they do whatever with it, that's a different part of artistic process than I wrote something, I want to get the actors together, or I have a friend who's great at getting actors together, let's all come together and we'll create this thing together in this moment. You're like hands in the project from beginning to end, right? I think that's the difference. Not I'm alone versus I have a team. No, it's like I have a part of all of the parts. Even if you're not editing everything or whatever, you're still in it in a way that's like maybe more than the big budget ones. I mean, a lot of the big budget ones are like everybody's famous, like the director and the DP and the, you know, the sound guy, and they all got lots of jobs. So like maybe that, you know, this great music that we heard them compose was just something they did on a Tuesday afternoon because they were like, what's next on my docket? Oh, okay. I got to write music for Soul, the new Pixar movie. Cool. Sound good? Is that good? Is that good? I sent it in. It's done, right? They're not like attached. They're not like with it. They're not like talking to the guy who wrote it. And they're like, oh my God, yes, I feel, yes, let's do this together. Let's be in the room with me while I play this. Da-na-na-na. What do you think? Good? Yeah? No, it's not like that, right? But there's a beauty to the connection. There's almost like a live theater in my mind, because live theater is my medium. Like in live theater, and you do live performance as well. So like you get the like audience reaction and like being in the room. I feel like DIY, as you're describing it, filmmaking is as close to like having a play with an audience as you can have. Yes. Right? Because if you're close enough with your crew, then your crew is like your audience. And then they really are honest with you about like whether they like it or not. The scene goes on and everyone's like, yeah, we did that. That was good that we did. Or the scene goes and everyone's like, maybe one more time. Maybe we just do one more time. Yep. Okay. One more time. You know, so it's like, but everyone's together. Like I just finished a short film like last week, working with some friends, and there were like, you know, 10 of us in the room as we're filming stuff. And yeah, everybody in the room was like, the scene would end and we'd all look around like, was it good? Do we like it? No, nobody likes it. Everyone's got stink face. Okay, we'll do it again. It's fine. We'll do it again. You know, but it's like everyone's in on it together. Everyone's in on creating it. Now, did you learn the basics of filmmaking, like how to do it, how to do the editing, how to do the camera work, how to do the script writing? Did you learn all that at the college that you went to, or did you know before? Because like you went to art school, but you're talking like your first art experience is the college. So like how did it come together?
Well, I wouldn't say the college was like my first art experience, because I had been like making stuff like my whole childhood, pretty much just like drawing, just like I still have like several folders filled with like drawings I made as a child in case anyone needs it at some point.
For your documentary, right? Exactly. As we discussed, for sure.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So I was just saying the college more just blew my mind in showing me what was possible with the kind of art that I wanted to do. You know, I got into like performance there, like performance art, which I then carried over into the comedy scene in Austin, which, you know, that's been great too. I feel like I do feel like the comedy and the filmmaking are like two sides of the same coin, because it's interesting because like with filmmaking you get no response until like several years after you're done with your movie. Maybe not several years, but you know, it's a long time, but like with comedy, it's like instantaneous. So I don't know. I think I craved that instant satisfaction as well, but also like, I don't know, like it, I guess what I'm saying is like, I require a lot. I'm very needy.
Listen, I need attention now. I need attention later.
Exactly.
I
need
so I'm like putting a lot of things out so that like you like me today, you like me tomorrow, you like me in a week. Like I'm trying to.
I'm like a chef in a kitchen, and I have something on like every burner on like multiple stoves.
Nice.
So like this will be ready now. This will be ready tomorrow. This will be ready in like an hour.
Mm-hmm,
just so like I'm hoping, you know, like there's a part of me that just like doesn't want to go away. Like I just want people, like I don't know, like this may be revealing too much, but there are times when I'm like, you know, notice me, give me what you would give to your idols or whatever. I don't know. But
yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know like where that came from with the college, or just like art making in general. I guess just like everyone around me growing up was like very, very supportive. Like I just had like a steady stream of support. Like I don't know if my family like fully understood what I did or what I was interested in, but like they would, you know, they would still like hang my weird drawings on the refrigerator and stuff, so I got pretty lucky.
So what we should do is, we're talking about how the positive feedback from your family has now led to a crazy egotistical streak. So be mean to your children. That's what we've learned.
Exactly.
That's what we tell them. This drawing is all right. It's not going in the Met. I'll tell you what. I'll put it on the fridge.
Do better.
It's okay.
Next time.
Oh, this is a bug. Oh, didn't look
Keep
like a bug.
Pushing.
Didn't look like one. No, I think the idea of wanting attention and like wanting, I mean, clearly you had artistic talent from the get. Like you were a tiny child sitting there with like your first crayon and you're like, doesn't this look just like what I'm drawing on the TV? And they're like, it's exactly the same, you know, like you had this talent to do this, you know, they're excited about this talent. The nice thing about especially as a child, drawing is one of the artistic talents that everyone's agreed is cool. Yes. Like that nobody wants any of us to make money in art. Yeah. No one. They're very against it as a culture. They're like, why? If you're not, it's all or nothing. It's like, if you're not in Hollywood, they're like, forget it. It's the worst. Right. But at the same time, like, the beauty of drawing is everyone's like, oh, I love a good picture. Let's somebody see a picture, right? Also, yeah. And you have to know this because you have children, is that like kids' drawings are the best because they make no sense and they're insane. But you're like, all right, cool. What's this thing? Oh, it's a carrot? What's the carrot doing? Oh, it's coming to dinner. Okay, great. There it is. Look at him. He's walking right through the door. Oh, he's sitting down. Yes, I noticed. Of course, that's what I see. That's exactly right. You know, like that's my favorite part is when you're looking at stuff and they're like, oh, no. Oh, but they're actually in a princess castle. I can tell that is exactly what I'm seeing is a princess castle. So, you know, that's nice. It's so good that you had like positive reinforcement in this moment. And as well, you should. The talent is there. But like, I don't know. Number one, I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting some attention, okay? Especially from the artistic realm. Like, this is our drive. This is what, like, we're trying to do. Yeah. And also, there are only so many of us brave enough to speak out loud in public places, right? So I say, right. If you're good at it and people have a fun time listening to you, keep doing it. Like, yeah. Who cares if it's two people you're making laugh? Like, I was telling one of my other guests a couple weeks ago that, like, my favorite thing is to make jokes in the grocery store. Am I getting paid for that? No. Is that even a real audience? No. But I love it. I love it. Yeah. You know, and do I want the attention? Yes. Especially these days, you can't see the beauty of my nose and mouth. Like, I need to make sure you hear this voice. So I'm going to throw it out there, right? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with artists and people wanting some attention and craving that like excitement from being on stage. I mean, so you're in college, you get into performance, you said performance art, which I thought was a very specific thing and really fun. Yeah. Tell me about what performance art meant to you. Were you doing like wacky? I spent the early aughts in New York City doing open mics that would definitely be called performance art open mics. I was not so much doing performance art. I was doing vague storytelling stand-up, which was mostly just me and a microphone talking in front of everyone about whatever I wanted. No jokes, no like... Right. But that didn't matter because we were all having a nice time. And I was like, I get the mic for how long? 6 minutes? Great. I'm just going to start talking and it's going to be great. I wanted attention too. tell me about your performance art.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty much the stuff that I'm doing now. Like I would do a lot of like gibberish, like opera singing type stuff. Which is like what I do now for the most part. Like I really got into these, like going back to the college. I watched a lot of videos by like performance artists, like who would use language in weird ways and would like use their bodies in strange ways.
The performance art that I'm aware of when I was in New York City, the kinds of things people would do was there was this guy and a girl who were best friends, and they would go up on stage and make one of them would coach the other one while the other one would do something horrific. So like the girl pooped in a baby pool on stage while her friend was like, yes, you're doing this. It is great. Come on. We've got this. Like, and it was like, is this really happening right now? I was there and I couldn't leave. I was working the event. So I was just like, oh my God, there's going to be poop. What's going to happen? Do I have to clean up the poop? I hope I don't. Like, oh my God. But it was funny. And the whole crowd was like, yeah, do it. Right. And everyone got super into it. And I was like, Oh, okay. So that's performance art. Okay. I get that now. I get that. So what's, so what kind of wacky stuff are you witnessing as performance art?
So I watched, videos of people like dragging like orchestral instruments across the ground and like making weird sounds with that and like opening up, toys, like electronic toys, and like resoldering connections to have them make like weird musical type stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess like later on I got pretty heavily into music and like an interest in like creating music through stuff like that, through like making weird sounds and weird voices and stuff like that. But another like performance art that really stuck with me was John Cage. I forget the name of the piece, but it's the one where it's like a full orchestra. They all have instruments and they're just silent for like 4 minutes. And I thought that was the coolest thing. And I'm like,
I love that.
That's awesome. I want to do that in real life.
See, that's like true power. If you can make people wait and then they're into it.
Yes. It's
that's true performance art, I think. Like, if you can make people have a bad time and then they somehow make it through to the other side and realize that they're having a bad time on purpose, you know what I mean? And then they're like, oh, I see that it's genius. Oh, yeah. Right? That's my favorite part. Because I feel like you and I are similar in that, like, we've always kind of just been artist people. So like we look at the world with an artist bent, like everything that happens, I'm all like, ooh, that'd be a cool painting. Or like, oh man, this scene right here would be great in a movie. But you know, some of these normies, they don't know what they're looking at. They appreciate art. They go to the events, you know, they're there. But when you can watch, so like a lot of times when I was watching my friends' shows and I'd like know what was going to happen in the show because I'd seen it before or helped them or worked with them or whatever, I would just watch the audience to see the moments of like dawning of realization when it was all like, when are they going to realize that she's doing a character? Or like, when are they going to realize that that person in a costume is their friend? You know what I mean? Like my favorite parts are people that get like so deep in costume that like they come up and they do like a whole thing. And then you're like, is that Shayna? Wait a minute.
Exactly.
Is that under that beard and that big hat? Oh my God. You know what I mean? And then that realization, that's the beauty. Ugh, I
like
love
the
that stuff.
Alter ego, like Tony Clifton, Andy Kaufman type thing.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Man, Andy Kaufman was another level for that guy. Like, like Andy Kaufman, who we quote unquote know from being famous, is, you know, like the first layer of who that guy was, his first mask, the initial mask that he let us see, and then all the other characters that he built on top of that. But, you know, even to make the Andy Kaufman reference, like, he, to bring it back to this idea that, like, we're all trying to do something that people like, that people will give us attention and, like, we'll look at our art and honor it, right? I would venture to say that he is way more famous now than he was when he was around. Like the reflection on what he brought to culture and what people then saw. And then there were other people who had clout enough to say, hey, wait, hold on. This guy was great. And let me tell you why he was great. He would have been like just some random schmo doing very much performance art. I mean, like his Mighty Mouse piece on SNL is performance art, essentially.
Exactly.
Right? Those kinds of things. In fact, SNL was how I got into everything. Like, I got cable as a kid. And then also for some reason, my parents were not paying attention to what I was when I was getting out of bed because I was very much all the time watching SNL. And and so I would see these things and I'd be like, wow, look at that guy, right? He's is he lip syncing a record? And in fact, the first time I ever like performed and like did a thing was at like the neighboring town's lip sync contest. And I was like, oh yeah, I can do this. This is, yeah, that's fine. I got this. And people were like, oh my God. And then I won the contest and I was all like, yeah, that's right. I can lip sync stuff. I'm good like the guy on SNL. I got it.
Nice.
Oh my God.
Kids in the Hall for me.
Yes.
As far as like comedy goes.
Yes.
Yeah, like when I saw that, I was just like, man, I want to do that. I keep saying I want to do that anytime I like see something I enjoy. Like, I want to do that too. That's, I don't know. This conversation, I feel like, is revealing things about myself that I was unaware of.
Well, you just want to do a lot of different things. That doesn't mean you won't. It just means now you're like, maybe I should write a list. So, like, when this episode comes out, just take a notebook and you're like, okay, projects for the next 3 years. Hold on, we've got a few. And then you're like, oh, okay, great. I'll do this. Awesome. Oh, apparently I spoke about the gibberish opera. I'll do another one of those. All right, let's do it.
Oh yeah.
Those are fun. Now, when you're doing gibberish opera, you are performing alone on stage and singing, right?
Right.
So you're doing like musical improv by yourself.
Yeah.
Wow. How,
yeah.
What? Where are the cojones for that? I mean, I know that we've established that we all want attention, and I also like being alone on stage because then all the eyes are for me. But, like, how did you, like, go, yeah, yeah, that's fine. Sure, I'll be by myself and sing for any amount of time. Oh, what's that? Not a song that's made up that exists? Just when I make up off? Fine, I'll do that. How did that happen?
I don't know. But I've done it for like 25 minutes straight once.
Whoa!
Actually multiple times. And I think back on that, I was like, nobody in their right mind would ever allow anyone to do this, much less do it themselves. So I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I guess it's just like how I explore musical things in my life is just through like doing things like that. Like, that's how I like explore music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like that idea. Now, you and I are aware of each other because we're in similar like improv circles. So, like, we've got cartoons, you're drawing, you're making films, you're working on films, you're going to film school, you're doing performance art. Now we're talking about gibberish opera. At what point in the course of your life did you get involved with improv? Because I feel like the improv training probably helped the gibberish opera situation. Then just like our mutual natural inclination for wanting to be alone on stage and have everyone look at us, helpful, right? So tell me about your like improv world. Like, how'd you get into that? It would seem that that community has enough going on that you can combine a lot of your interests.
It's true. Yes. So I got really, I mean, I was always into comedy, like Kids in the Hall, but I never like understood how people actually did it, or like how, like, I didn't know what improv was until I like started actually reading about it. I just thought it was like this amazing superpower that, like, you know, certain blessed people had, that they were like anointed by the gods with the ability to like take a ball and say something funny while holding the ball, or like another prop. But then, you know, like I listened to like podcasts which were improv based, like Comedy Bang Bang, stuff like that, and I was just like, this seems really fun, this seems really cool. So when I came to Austin, I found the Hideout, took some classes there, And just that just kind of like set me off on my like journey through improv, and eventually found like musical improv, which definitely became like my sort of favorite comedic thing.
Yeah. The Hideout is a very large community, so I imagine that it certainly gives you access to, you know, more people to potentially talk to about projects. Like when you're doing films and stuff, there's people who are like, oh yeah, I also do films and whatnot. So that's the nice thing about improv theaters, I think, is that like you can, because some people are like, oh, I'm not like super into improv, and I'm like, yeah, okay, great, there's lots of stuff that happens there. Take like a class, make some friends, and then like if you don't want to take any more classes, great, you don't have to, you then have those friends, and then you can be like, hey friends, let's open up our networks and do another project in whatever it is, you know, one of the thousands of projects that you have in your brain right now that you're like, I want to do this. I want to do this. I'm telling you, just make a bucket list. There's plenty of time. Plenty of time to do it. You can do all of them for sure.
I'll do it.
Plus, in like a minute and a half, the world's going to open up again for live theater, and they're going to be starved for it. They whine and complain online about how they don't love artists, but they're hungry for us. They want to see the new stuff that we're coming up with for sure. So whatever cool ideas that you have brewing, the audience is ripe. They are ready. They want to be part of it, right? I mean, even to the point where, like, last week when I worked on the short film that I worked on, it was just nice working on a project with people. Like, I hadn't done it in so long, not only because of the pandemic, but also because my child is 4. And so I've been sort of home with him for 4 years, and I haven't really done that much artistically. And I mean, I've done the podcast, which is a wonderful experience to be able to do and meet people and chat with people about creativity. But, you know, doing a film, being like on set, doing stuff, it's different. You know, it's like, oh, I'm doing something. This is going to be amazing. I'm creating something so wild. Oh, man. So for you, what is the thing that you're, I know that we've established that you have like 1,000 aspirations creatively. And again, I'm like, do it, do them all. But like, what are the things that are exciting you right now as far as like ideas that you're working on? And you don't have to give me any spoilers, I get, if you're like, hold on, wait. I can't tell you about my screenplay because it's not ready yet, which I appreciate. So like, but what are the things that you're like creatively working on right now?
Sure. So a few months ago, I finished a short film called Oh What Rice, Oh What Beans. and it's about a man who's obsessed with eating rice and beans. And since then, I've just kind of been flitting around from project to project. But I think the time has finally come. It's here. It's now for me to make this screenplay that I wrote a few years ago. It's called Aw Damn It. And actually just today, my friend was like, like, I was just kind of telling him, like, my hang-ups with, like, filmmaking and stuff and like, not knowing where to go, what to do. You've kind of caught me on a very kind of energetic day because my friend, it basically encouraged me to just make the damn movie, like, to just do it, to just start it. Maybe people will come, maybe not, but just start making the movie. It is live action. It's a musical, and it's a dark comedy. I sent the script around to some festivals and got a good response, from those. So that's kind of like encouragement that I need to make this movie. So
yeah.
Aw Damn It. Check for it and
coming soon.
Some sort of viewing apparatus sometime in the next decade.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Now, when you're submitting your screenplay to festivals and stuff, are you submitting it to get the feedback? Like, are there certain festivals that you, like, get good feedback from? Or are you also, because I know that this is a side thing that happens in festivals, like, are you hoping that somebody reads it and goes like, oh, my God, I love this. I want to make it right now. is that, like, a hope and dream?
I think it was just a way of getting my script out there just in front of more eyeballs. Actually at the Austin Comedy Film Festival, we actually had a reading of some of like the first 10 pages of the script. And that was really exciting and cool. But yeah, I think it's just like, because screenplays are weird because they're not really meant to be read, you know, by just like people not involved in making the movie. I mean, there are like some screenplays that are like written like novels or something. Like, I don't know if you read the script for Tree of Life, but it's like the stage directions are like, it's like, Mr. O'Brien looks to the side. Where is God? God, why have you left us here in these bodies? Cut to. Anyway, that, like, but yeah, like, with screenplays, you don't, like, you don't really get an instant response from them until, like, you get it in front of enough eyeballs. So, I mean, that's kind of like where I'm at with that. That's why I submitted it to things. And it got a good response from those festivals, so that's more encouragement to continue. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, plus I also, like, I wondered if there were certain, you know, things where you're like, oh, I don't know that, you know, I don't have these three or four people to, like, read my stuff and give me notes back, so I'm going to use the festivals for that, because that's what a lot of people do. I mean, like, right. I definitely, it's on my, the last screenplay that I started turned into a novel, so I was like, well, okay, I guess I can't send this to a festival, but it
my
was like...
My novel turned into this screenplay. Like, it started as a novel.
It's all just stories, right? And, yeah. Like, sometimes, yeah, because, like, I wrote my story in a short story class, and then the people in that were giving me the workshop notes were like, I need a lot more of this. There's the information. I need more. There's, like, this thing you brought up, I want to know all about that. This thing you brought up, I need to know more about that. So then I was like, oh, okay. And, like, I start writing stuff. And my coach was like, are you going to turn this into a screenplay? And I was like, there's not enough time. This would be like a 6-hour. No, I have to make this a longer thing, because now I have to answer all these questions you guys had, and you're right. And, you know, so I love the idea that storytelling mediums can change and ebb and flow and stuff like that. Oh, man. Even somebody writes a book and then, like, somebody else writes the screenplay of the book.
Yep.
Oh, man. Those are always fun.
Or, like, Mars Attacks, somebody wrote trading cards that became a movie, that became a novelization of the movie.
Yes.
Based on trading cards. You're right. It's all stories, even if it's, like, bubblegum wrappers.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever made, like, a Bazooka Joe movie?
I don't know. Maybe they couldn't get the rights.
Yeah.
You know, I think about that, about all the different kinds of things, like the legal difficulties and whatnot of creating something like that, where it's like, you know, we're talking about, like, Disney, like, he's inspired by something, he, like, just makes it. And, like, back then they're a little less litigious, so they're, like, not like, hey, man, don't make that movie. That's, like, my idea. Maybe they were, and he was like, shh. But, like, because that's what they do today. But then at the same time, like, you know, you just want to be able to create stuff and have it be, I don't know. Some people are creating in different ways. Some people are inspiring other people, but now everybody needs to have ownership. Whereas to kind of bring it back to the idea of the family that you're talking about when it comes to filmmaking and creating projects, I love a group think. You know, like was talking about my story where my friends in the writing group were like, I need this information, I need that information. I didn't go like, I don't think so, guys. That's not the way my brain works. Like, it was like, cool, what? Okay, tell me everything. Like, I'm into like open collaborative, like projects, like, okay, cool. So what's your idea? Like, let's make it happen. Do you have 8 tentacle legs? Like, I'm willing to change your character to be an octopus. However, are you prepared? So, you know, it's like, I love working with different people. And another thing to harken back to, like, improv communities, I find that improvisers, like people in improv communities, when you're creating projects with them, they're a lot more open and sort of loose with ideas than a lot of other people. Like, people who are just working on film or are just working on comedy or just, you know, in a sort of like, I don't know what you mean. This is the way a joke has to be written. And you're like, but does it?
Yeah.
Like, it can literally be any series of words if at the end they laugh, right? So, like, it doesn't really matter. Or, like, we're talking about the format of the screenplay. It's like, yeah. I mean, I've definitely read a few where it was like, where you're like, why are you putting so much effort into these scene directions? No one's reading them.
Yeah.
Like there are 2 assistants who are like psyched when they get your scripts because they're all like, oh man, this guy's got a great one. Oh, listen to what happened on the side. Does anyone talk about it? No one. There's just a paragraph about what it looks like in this room, but no words. No one says a peep about it. Oh man. Yeah, I love that stuff.
That's my favorite thing about improv, which is like, you know, somebody tells you you have a show at like 9 o'clock that night, and then like 3 o'clock you call like 12 of your friends and you're like, hey, I'm making a show in which we all play sandwiches. Would you be interested? And most of the time people will say yes. Like, the only time people will say no is like if they are busy, but I put busy in quotes for the listener.
Yeah. Like, if they're like, listen, I already did my sandwich aria, okay? Like, I'm good. I don't need to be in your sandwich play. God. There's something funny about that in comedy worlds, though, where you're all like, okay, guys, does anybody have 6 bird costumes? Somebody's like, yes, I do. I have all 6 at my home. And you're like, yep, this is the crowd. Like, whenever, what was it? My friend, we were in the short film, they show up and the props girl has this like humongous cowboy hat, and we were like, who bought that? And the director's like, I bought it because I need it. And we were like, yes! like there's something joyous about these like ridiculous things that like can come together and create. And I feel like I've done a lot of theater, I've done a lot of like film stuff. There is a humorlessness the closer you get to professional. You know what I mean? It's less fun. It's not sort of like, you know, like you're not going to get 6 cat costumes from your friend to do like a professional film, right? You're going to like rent 6 pristine cat costumes that someone's job is to groom every evening. You know what I mean? Like that's like, and they like have a rental and they're like, you cannot eat in the costume. You know what I mean? As opposed to like friends wearing costumes. And then there's like, how many photos of like behind the scenes have you seen where people are in like full costume and they're eating like a burrito? You know what I mean? And you're like, yeah, that's right. I was like, and that's when that cat got a stain on the front of him. He did not have one before, but now that cat, that's what he looks like. We went back and did those scenes again.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So funny. I feel like, you know, when we first talked about the idea of, you know, it being hard to find people to collaborate with, I totally feel you on that because, like, it definitely occurs to me. That's definitely a problem that I have encountered as well, you know, and there is a part of me, the negative voice in the back of my head that'll say like, well, maybe you're just not funny enough, or like, maybe you're too old now, or whatever other terrible things I say to myself. And I think that it's just like, not true, but I mean that in a way that's less like, let's just talk about rainbows, and more like, we're artists for life. You know, there are people that come in, they do a project, they do a couple of things, they take off, they go back, they work in real estate now. Like, oh, but then there's people who are like, no, I'm going to keep doing projects. Like when I eventually die, my son finds me in a house filled with crazy props everywhere. Like, that's what I'm looking for. Like that's the key. You know what right. I mean? It's like, where'd you find your mom when she passed away? I'm not sure what she was doing. She was at the sewing machine and there was a lot of purple velvet, but she must have been working on a project because she just, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, never let it stop you from creating these things, because these things are the joy that you have. I mean, and also like some of the most famous artists that we think of as established and like important now have no idea that they're important. Yeah. Like, I make this reference all the time, but like, sweet old Vinnie Van Gogh, he didn't know.
Yeah.
He doesn't know one lick. Not a day of his life was he aware that now he is so ubiquitous that everybody knows his name before they know presidents' names.
Exactly.
Right? Like, it's... you just don't know. Like, you think like Beethoven, everyone was all like, hey, man, you're killing it. Amazing. Good stuff. No. But like, I hear a song, I can hum a whole, you know what I mean? Like, I hear music and I'm like, how do I know this song? And they're like, it's Beethoven. And you're like, oh, it's in my psyche. Right.
Well, there was a guy who wrote like a 1,000-page like fantasy novel. And they like just found it in his apartment, like after he passed away.
Yeah.
Henry Dirger, I guess. I think that was his name.
Yeah. It's amazing. And then They were just like, there's a whole story. There's a whole piece of art just sitting here waiting for us to find, like gold. Like, yeah. I mean, you don't know. You have to keep creating. You'll find the people, you know, right now it's super hard too. It's extra, extra hard because for 2 years we were all told to find a job in something else. And there's a lot of us that are like, no, I'm going to wait it out. And then when people let me see other people again, like even the fact like you and I are literally probably less than 2 miles away from each other. You know what I mean? Like we are not far, but we are far because it's just the way of the world. Like, we're not connecting physically with people anymore. We're talking on Zoom, and yes, we're connecting, you know, creatively. I feel great about our conversation, like, as far as, like, inspirational. Like, I'm like, God, I have so many ideas after this. You know what I mean? Like, there's a good creative exchange going on between us, but the onstage, the physical, it's just not there just yet. But when it is, man, the wheat has been cut from the chaff. Like, only the solid forever artists will still be like, yeah, man, let's do that project. And those are always the people that you want. Those are always the people that you want in your project, are the people who love it the way you love it, that have that fire inside of them the way you have that fire, right? Back in the day, you know, 2 years ago, you remember that day? There were just randos who like just were like doing it for funsies, right? No. It will be like the people that are going to be out there, the people that are still looking to do projects, they're in it for life. They're in it for love. They're in it because it's their blood pumping through them. They're like, guess what I'm going to do? Perform today. Where? I don't know. Yeah. That's why I'm in the grocery store making jokes, right?
Right.
Like, you perform wherever you are, you pull out these stories. I mean, the story I was telling you about my novel that I'm writing, it's literally a story I've had in my head for, when I looked it up, when was the first time I wrote down notes about it? Since 2014. I had been working on these characters. I've been writing stuff. I actually wrote the whole thing in a screenplay and then decided that I didn't want to focus on the same characters pulled it out, decided to focus on a different character, and went a different way with it. Did it mean that any of the work or the effort that I put into it over the past like 7 or 8 years wasn't worth it? No, it's great. It got me where I needed to be. You know, it got my brain moving. It got those characters. And like, you know, if you're ever like, ah, do I throw away this project? Give it a couple of weeks. If those characters are still knocking around in there going like, but what if I went here? And you're like, oh, okay, that's, oh, maybe you he could go there, you know? That's the beauty. We have these stories in our head, these ideas, these cartoons playing in our brains forevermore. Some people live boring lives. Not us.
True.
Not us.
That's true.
Mm-mm.
Yes.
Mm-mm. So last final note from you. I wanted to ask you, since I feel empowered and I hope that you feel empowered as well, for new filmmakers, for like people that are in film school now who are like gonna come out into this wacky world of creating stuff, like what advice do you have for them? What do people need to know? Or like, what do you think you need to tell them to drive them to make the projects that they need to make?
For me, the main thing that's driving me is entertain yourself. Like if you can think of a movie that you would want to see, make that movie, because it doesn't exist yet. That is the movie we need. If something is funny to you, put that in your movie, even if like nobody else thinks it's funny. You know, like in my Rice and Beans movie, I basically wrote the whole movie so that my friend Vinny would be able to say the stupidest shit ever, just because it makes me laugh. And, and it's just like, you just got to entertain yourself. That's all you got to do. You have to like go into the state of like a child in their room, just like playing with their magnadoodle. just do that. Don't worry about what people think of you. You know, there will be people who don't like what you're doing. It's fine. They don't like what you're doing, but it's not that they don't like you. It's just that what you're doing is not their vibe. And that's fine, because there are many people who are going to love what you do if you just stick to your guns and just like continue doing, what you do. Like, don't waver from that. If you feel like, you know, if you feel weird about doing something, don't do it. Just stay on your course. Yeah. And don't get distracted. And that's easier said than done.
Totally.
But, you know, ultimately, if you're just trying to make yourself laugh, that's usually the best. That's the best.
I think the other thing too is that you can feel joy in a project. Yes. If the people had a wonderful time making it, whether or not it's your cup of tea, doesn't matter, because you can feel the energy of that joy coming out through the screen, right? Oh, yeah. That's the other reason why, you know, you should not only do what entertains you, but don't give up on your point of view. A lot of people start to second guess their own. Maybe I don't know what funny is, or maybe this isn't a good story. Mm-mm. You love that. You love it hard, because you loving it is going to make it a better movie than any rewrite you could ever put into it, right? It's the energy of the joy, right, that really makes that just the best piece it needs to be.
Yes, absolutely.
awesome. Jared, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It has been so great to chat with you. I feel like we had like a whole experience. Like I feel changed. I have new ideas and I'm inspired to create new projects based on our discussion. So I feel so good about it. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I am amped now.
Yeah. Like
11 o'clock at night.
Sorry.
What time? No. I'm just saying I'm amped. I'm totally amped now. And I'm going to, I love this conversation so much. This is so much fun.
Good.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.